top of the Amud. Amar Bizera. Amar Bizera Mer Shmuel. Shchita with a hot knife. Libe Nisakin Vishachat Ba Shchita Sav Sheref. He took a knife and he heated it to the point of being white hot in a fire. That's what we term Libun, as Rashi notes. So shchita sav kshera, the shchita is kosher. We don't call this burning it. We call it a proper act of shchita because chiduda kodem libuna. The neck is exposed to the sharp edge of the knife before anything gets burned, and therefore it's actually cut. That's our answer. For ikat sdadin, to which the Gemara says, well, wait a minute, there are the sides of the knife when they enter into the cut are actually going to burn. The simanim, and as Rashi notes, this is actually somewhat controversial, but Rashi says, "Ve'ikat studin disagin kishenichnas l'tocha chatach kodem shetishachid rovas simanim." When the sides of the knife enter the cut before the shchita has actually gone through the majority of the trachea and the esophagus, he so refes es hasimanim, it burns them. V'nimtzei shinis refes kodem shchita, even if the point is not heating it up, the sides of the knife are heating them up before the shchit is actually complete, and so it's burned before then. Shari veshet, Rashi continues, shari veshet nekuvasa b'mashahu litaref, because if the veshet has a hole, even the tiniest hole, the animal is already a treifa. How much more so if you're burning it? A sreifa kenekevu, burning it is as damaging as making a hole in it. So therefore the nekev is considered to be burned before you actually complete the shchita. So which the Gemara answers, Beis HaShchita Mirvach Ravach. When you cut the site where the shchita occurs, actually the sides of it split apart. They widen apart, and therefore they're not going to touch the sides of the knife. The Chasim Sofer quoted the Hafla, his Rebbe, saying as Purim Torah, that maybe Rabbi Zera knew the ins and outs of the shchita experience because of his experience with Rava. Right, the Gemara in Megillah Dav Zayin, come Rabba Shachte le Rabbi Zera. The Rabba Shechted Rabbi Zera. So he says maybe Rabba Shechted him with a hot knife, and therefore Rabbi Zera knew exactly what the experience was like. There's more to say on that. It's Purim Torah, it's not literal. But in any case, that introduces us to another question related to a hot knife, not directly germane for us, but as a spin-off from this discussion. Ibayalu libein shfud vehikabo mishum shchin nidan o mishum michva nidan. The Gemara asks, if a person is struck, if his skin is struck with a hot shfud, a shfud is a spit, like you would use for a shish kebab. Nowadays people say shipud. But if you take a spit like that and you strike a person's skin, does that make what we call a shchin mark or a michva mark? Shchin being damage from heat and michva being damage from exposure to fire. So which the Gemara says, who cares? L'may nafkamina, where's your practical relevance? L'chadisanya, because the following brisa, it says, Shchin u'michva metamin b'shavua echad b'shnei simon and b'seir lavan u'apisyon. If you're dealing with marks of tsaras that develop on the skin, the shchin and the michva both have the same points regarding certain issues of tsaras. They will be metami b'shavua echad, meaning that you will only end up, the person who develops a sign of tsaras in one of these categories, will only end up being quarantined for a week before we'll determine that he is either tamei or that he's not tamei. B'shnei simanim, and there are two signs that might develop on his skin that would make him tamei. One is b'seir lavan, the growth of white hair in the spot, or b'pisyon, and the other would be if the mark spreads. The Braisa asks, if the shchin and the michvah are subject to the same rules in terms of the quarantine and in terms of the signs that make the person tamei, that make him mitzora, in that case, why does the Torah identify them separately? Teach me that if shchin has if there's a mark of shchin on the skin that isn't kashir. Remember that the shir for tzaras is a gris size, a bean size mark. So let's say you have a situation in which on the skin there is a mark of less than a bean-sized area of shchin, and right side by side with that is a mark of less than a bean size that's michva. The rule is they're not mitzarif, they don't combine, so they're considered to be two separate entities. The shchin and the michva are considered two separate entities. So what? So the point is that I want to know, when a person's skin is hit with a hot piece of metal, does that make a shchin or does that make a michva? I'll need to know in terms of what if, as the Gemara is going to play out, what if that happens? The person's skin is struck, and right next to that, he has a mark that's Shchin variety or Michva variety. Will it combine with the mark that was created by this piece of metal? And the Gemara now plays that out. We already have proved that the Shchin and the Michva don't combine with each other. We now go through two more points that are important to build this case. The second point that we add is what exactly the difference would be between Shchin and Michva. What's the physical difference? V'tanya, the Braisa says, Ezu Shchin ve'ezu Michva. What is Shchin? What is Michva? Laka be'etz, be'evan, be'gefet, be'chamei tveriu, b'chol davar shlo ba machmas ha'ur. If a person is struck with something which is hot, but not hot as a result of fire, it's a piece of wood that is simply warm from being out in the sun. A person is struck with a stone, with gefet. Remember gefet from the fourth parak in Shabbos. We talked about insulating things. So gefet here is not gefet that was heated on a flame. The gefet was the skins of the olives. As we discussed there, ubechamei tveria, with hot springs of tveria. We're going to come back to those in a little bit. Ubechol davar shalaba machmas ha'ur, anything which has heat that doesn't come from a fire, la suye avar meikara, which is meant to include lead when it's mined. Whether the lead is hot because by nature lead is hot, or whether the lead is hot because of the friction associated with the mining process, the heating isn't fire associated. The zeu shchin, that's what creates shchin. Tosfos notes that chamei tveria, according to Rabbi Yossi, are heated by eish shal gehenim, by the fire of gehenim. So technically it is fire heated. But he says that's a different fire. That's not fire like physical fire. That's or bidei shamayim. That's a class unto itself. If anyone knows what that means, let me know. Ve'ezehu michva. That's shchin. And then you have michva. Michva is a burn from fire. Nichva begachela. Someone is burned with a coal. Beremetz, or embers. Besidro teach, with hot lime. Begibsit roteach. The hot gibsit, which is also another type of a lime gypsum. And it was burned. In all these cases, anything that's heated on the fire, la suye chamei ha'ur, by which we mean to include water heated over a fire, zoi michva, that's what generates a michva. So we've established with the second source that shchin and michva come from two different sources, one from general heat and one from fire. Why that should make a different mark on the skin is a very interesting question, but I think that there are federal laws that prevent you from experimenting with this. But it's not simple and straightforward to me. I don't know. I mean, I'm serious when I say that you need to really experiment and know what the difference is going to be in terms of the appearances. There is a difference that's clear from the discussion, but what it's going to be, why the skin will look different, I'm not sure. Bishavu Echad was that the longest hesger, the longest quarantine someone will have if he experiences one of these signs is going to be Shavu Echad, 1 week. After that, either it's spread or developed a white hair, in which case he's a mitzara, or it hasn't spread and it hasn't developed a white hair, in which case he's nothing. That's Matan B'Shavu Echad. After 1 week, you're going to know whether he's a mitzara or not. So we've said two things about Shchin and Michva. Number one, we've said they don't combine. They're considered two different types of tzaraz. And number two, we've described different sources they come from. And now we get our third source in this discussion, and that's going to wrap it up. V'tanya, the Braisa says, Shchin u Michva. Im shchin kodem lemichva bitel michva es hashchin, ve michva kodem es leshchin bitel shchin es hamichva. If a person endures shchin and michva on the same spot on his skin in sequence, so whichever one comes later will nullify, will cancel out whichever one came before. So if he has a shchin mark and then he gets hit with a michva mark on the spot, he now has a michva. And if he has a michva spot on his skin and then gets hit with shchin on that spot, then now it's shchin. So that's our third source. So now we combine all of those things. What's the case that we're asking about here when we want to know if a person gets this mark on his skin Is it shchin or is it mechva? They could go to have a bechatzi gris shchin meikara. There was already half a gris of shchin on his skin. And then, just for kicks, he heats up a shvud in a fire, and that hits the skin right next to the original spot. So that now he has half a gris of the mark from this shvud. My, what's the law? Chavta kadim va'asi havla umevatale lechavta vavele shchinu mechva v'lo mitzdarfin. Do I say, on the one hand, perhaps, that the chavta kadim, the blow from this poker, from this piece of metal that hit him, came first. So he had shchin first. Then along came the heat of the mikvah and heated up that spot, and now it's mikvah. Because you told me that whichever one comes second is going to be the one that endures. So therefore now it's mikvah, and therefore it's mikvah beside shchin, and it's not mitzdarif, correct. O Dilma, or perhaps the opposite order. Havla kadim, first it was heated up and it was a mikvah. Va'asi chavto mevatele lahavla. And then along comes the shchin, from the blow with this fire heated thing, and that nullifies the initial mikvah. Bavle shchin, so now it's shchin u'shchin u'mitzdar. Bavle shchin u'shchin, and therefore it's shchin with shchin side by side u'mitzdar, and it'll combine. So that's
first,
what I want to know.
You have the first shchin there.
Yeah.
Then if the chavata comes first, they should both be mitzdarif to become a shir shalom.
Only if the kohen sees it. Only if the kohen sees it, right?
When the havla comes along, they're mitzdarif to become a shir shalom.
The
kohen can be mevatel.
But the kohen has to see it. If the kohen doesn't see it, it didn't happen. We're dealing with sarah, so all the rules are different. But you're right. Theoretically, that would be true. So the Gemara's first attempt to prove it is what ties into our discussion. Tashma, come in here. Dam Rabbi Zera, Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Zera's comment. He said, "Libein sakin b'shachah bashchita sokshera chiduda kodem libuna." He says, when you cut someone with a hot knife, the shchita is kosher because the sharp edge is there first. Alma chavta kodem. So you see that it's the chavta that's first. It's the blow first. The pressure first before the heat is going to singe anything. So does that then answer our question? To which he says, not necessarily. Because that's a very sharp edge from the shechita knife. Chidu de sha'ani. The sharp edge is different. As Rashi says, dimitoshu chad, since it's sharp, ein hevelo ursha bo chazak. The heat from the fire is not going to be strong. The cut occurs before the heat does, as opposed to the shvud, which we understand as more or less blunt. And therefore, we could argue that the phenomenon is going to be different. So that may not be, after all that, we brought all of this just because it was a spin-off of, it brought in our source as a proof. But after all, our source is not actually an adequate proof. So Tashma, come in here, we bring a second attempt. Libein shfud vehika bo nidon mishu mikvas esh. If a person heats up the shfud to being white hot, and hits the skin, we have a source that says it's mikvah. So alma chavta kadim. So does that mean then that the chavta, the blow, is first? That's mikvah. To which he answers, once again, hasamnami debarzie mivras. Maybe that's where he stabbed it in, right? Like the barrels in the side of the chavis, the spigot you stick into a barrel. So maybe he stabbed him. Dahinu chidud, and therefore it's also a sharp edge. The heat doesn't penetrate out from the sharp edge. Why it wouldn't is again an interesting physics issue. But that's the idea. Okay. We're done with hot knives, and now we move on to a sequence of discussions about three inappropriate knives that were used for shechita and what the status is of the meat. And along with this, we're going to get into some very interesting material. If you're not going to be here for the full shiur, make sure you read every tosos on this page carefully. The discussions about how you kosher a knife, how are knives meant to be koshered. So, we have three inappropriate knives. One will be a knife used for karbanos of avodah zarah. One will be a knife that had been used for non-kosher shechita, or for non-kosher meat. And then, a knife that had been used to shecht a treifa. So, Amar Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua. Here's knife number one. Sakin shel avodas kochavim, a knife of avodah zarah, as Rashi says, meaning that they use it for karbanos, for idolatry. So, muter lishchot ba. You're allowed to use that for your own shechita. Va'aser lachtoch babasar. However, you would not be allowed to use that knife to cut meat, stam. Rashi explains, this knife is aser bahana. You're not allowed to benefit from this knife. So you are able to shecht with it, but you're not able to cut meat with it. Why? So he says, Mutter lishchot ba, you're allowed to shecht with it because mekalkalhu. Because fundamentally you are damaging the animal. Because the animal was worth a lot more money when it was alive. Now that it's dead, it's just meat. It was worth a lot more when it was still on the hoof. So therefore, your shechita is considered to be a destructive act, and therefore you're allowed to do it with the knife of Avodah Zarah. But you can't cut meat with it because metakenu, you're now making the meat usable. That is, fixing it. Tosfos notes that regarding the laws of Shabbos, we don't say that shechita is mekalkel, is a destructive act. But there, that's because you have a specific goal in mind, melechas machshavas. Your goal is get meat to be able to eat, and this is how you carry it out. Here, our standard is different. Our standard is, what's the value of the animal? The standard for the laws of Shabbos is different from the standard of Hana elsewhere. Okay, so that's the idea. Amar Rava, however, Rava says, we have to qualify this. Sometimes shechting will be called improvement of it, and therefore if you shecht it with a knife of Avodah Zarah, then the meat's off limits to you. Where? Bimisukenes. If you're dealing with an animal that is dangerously ill, so that it was going to die if you didn't do the shechita, and by doing the shechita while it's still strong enough, it has the whole pirchus, the discussion we have elsewhere, for how you demonstrated the animal actually was not already dying. But the point is, this animal was going to die soon, and therefore it didn't have great value. And by shechting it, you've actually salvaged its value. So if you shecht it with a knife of Avodah Zarah, then you're not allowed to benefit. You're not supposed to be benefiting from Avodah Zarah knives. Umechatech mutter, on the other hand, you can come up with a case where cutting the meat with an Avodah Zarah knife will be allowed. Where? Ba'at mi dekarmen lekorbana. If you have pieces of meat that are really nice and that are usable for sending gifts to somebody important, and then you cut them up, you've now ruined the piece. So therefore, you're not called benefiting from the knife of Avodah Zarah. This makes it very subjective, the law of how I define benefit for Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, well, that's all well and good in terms of the Isser Hana, but you know, this knife was used for Avodah Zarah. There are pieces of Avodah Zarah carbon on it. There's fat from the Avodah Zarah carbon on it. Why don't you mention that you're not allowed to use it because there's fat from the Isser? So the Gemara answer is, top of Chesamud Beis, Eid B, Bechadasha. The answer is, it's a new knife. It's a knife that had never been used for Avodah Zarah. Well, if it had never been used for Avodah Zarah, what's your problem? Chadasha, Bein L'Rabbi Yishma, Bein L'Rabbi Akiva, Misham She Avodas Kochavim Hein. Even if it's been dedicated for idolatrous use, it is only an item that serves Avodah Zarah. Misham She Avodas Kochavim Hein Nasur and Ad She Yavdu. That which is going to serve Avodah Zarah only becomes off limits once it's actually used. So the Gemara gives two answers. E bayis ema de pasik be gavza la avodas kochavim. One answer will be it's where he used it to cut wood for Avodah Zarah. So therefore it has been used for Avodah Zarah, but it hasn't absorbed any treif. There's no fat on it. Alternatively, you're talking about an old knife. However, it was heated in a fire, and therefore it was koshered. So this is one of two major Tosfos on the issue on this page. Tosfos on this is printed on Amud Aleph, at the bottom of Amud Aleph, but then also Tosfos further down on this side in Vehilchasa, talks about what kind of koshering is needed. You mentioned needing to kosher your knife with libun. No one koshers a knife with libun. Right, we kosher a knife, generally speaking, by stabbing it into the earth first to clean it, and then after that doing hagala. So what are you koshering this Avodah Zarah knife with libun for? Why is that the standard in the Gemara? So to make a long story short, Tosfos says if you want to use a knife for cold, that's all you're going to do is cut something cold with it, it's really sufficient just to clean it by stabbing it in the ground 10 times. And then, once you've done that, that's how you've cleaned the surface. You can't clean it the way you normally clean surfaces because of the sharp edge and the pressure with which things are attached to the knife. If the knife was used just once for something inappropriate, then also you can clean it just by rubbing it with a rough cloth, which we're going to see later on the page. If hetera bala, if the knife absorbed permitted things, like you have a knife that absorbed meat, kosher meat, and then you want to use it for dairy, assuming you're allowed to kasher from meat to dairy, then hagala is sufficient. Or like if it was used for chametz before Pesach and you want to use it now on Pesach, so hagala is sufficient, assuming it was never used in a flame. And then if you have a knife that was used in a flame or that was used for iser, like with avodah zara, then maybe we require the additional step of doing libun. Correct. And that tells us a nice discussion about people who buy knives off of the avodah zara and whether they should be doing libun or doing hagala. Today we don't let anybody do that at all. But Tosfos talks about whether you would do hagala or libun if you wanted to go to an antique store or something and buy a used knife. Okay. More to see in those Tosfos. But in any case, that was our first case. Our case was knife of avodah zara, and we said you can't benefit from a knife of avodah zara, and there may be a concern for fat if you're dealing with a case in which it was actually used for a carbon and not just dedicated for avodah zara. Okay, our second of the three inappropriate knives is the knife that was used by non-Jews, not for avodah zara, just used by non-Jews in general with their non-kosher food. So Itmar, six lines down. Hashochet besakin shall ovdei kochavim. Not avodas kochavim, but ovdei kochavim. If someone shechts with a knife from idolaters, Rav Amar Kolef, Varaba Barbar Chana Amar Mediach. So Rav says, you look at the spot where you cut the animal, and you peel back that layer, the outermost layer of flesh. That's the layer that is corrupted by the treif in this knife. Rabbi Bar Chana says, I don't need to peel anything back. Mediach, you just rinse it. Anything that's there is absorption. It's not absorbed. It's simply superficial. Tosfos notes this is dealing with where you know that the knife is a ben yomo. It had been used in the last 24 hours, because the rule is that is in general stam kelim shlav de kochavim la bnei yoman in a bnei yoman. That the assumption is that if I encounter someone who isn't Jewish, I can assume that his implements for food have not been used in the last 24 hours. Assuming I don't have any other information. If I have other information, that doesn't work. That's a very important halacha in kashrus. People try to argue sometimes that you could say, well, something that's prepared on kalim in a non-kosher restaurant or in the deli section in a supermarket, the knives are not b'nei yoman. But the truth of the matter is, in those circumstances, they often do, because of the nature of the business, they use that equipment constantly. You can't argue it's not b'nei yoman. So that's a practical ramifications. So so he says here that if you have this knife, which you know to be a ben yomo, Rav says you have to peel back the outermost layer of the flesh. Rav Rechana says you just rinse it. What's the machlokas about? The machlokas is about the level of absorption that's going to take place in a beis hashchita at the spot where you do the shechting in the neck. Is that spot hot enough to cause absorption? Or is it cold? But we're going to have two different versions of the debate. Watch what we do here. First version. Let's say this is the machlokes. Demar savar beis hashchita. The Bach flips tzonin and roteach here. Demar savar beis hashchita roteach. Umar savar beis hashchita tzonin. That works better because it's parallel to Rav and Rabba Bar Chana as they're presented in the Gemara. The first view is you have to peel back the outer layer of flesh and you can't use that because the beis hashchita is hot and therefore stuff got absorbed from the knife. And the second view is that it's cold and therefore you have to do rinse it. Is that the debate? Lo, Dekuli am a beis hashchita roteachu. I'll tell you that everybody agrees the beis hashchita is hot. Madam are kolev shapir. The one who says you peel it back, that makes sense. You peel it back because because there's absorption from the heat. Umadam are mediach, and the one who says no, you rinse it. Aidi detridi simanim afukedam lo bali. Because what's going on is that the trachea and the esophagus are busy extruding blood. They are bleeding. And therefore, since the blood is going outward, nothing is going to be absorbed. That's his argument. It can be as hot can be. Nothing is going in because everything is rushing out. That's the argument that he presents. Again, a very interesting physiological position. Ika de Amri, alternate version, to kulei ama beis hashchita tzonin. Everybody agrees that it's actually cold. It's not hot, it's cold. Then what's the debate about here? Manda Amar Mediach Shapir. The one who says that the one who says that you rinse it, that's fine because everything is cold. Manda Amar Kolef. The one who says that you actually peel it back, is agav duchka de sakina bala. Another important principle in kashering is that the pressure of something can cause absorption. So the pressure of the knife here, duchka de sakina, the pressure from the knife, causes whatever's in the knife to be absorbed in the material that you're cutting. That's halacha, correct. So if I take a knife that had been used for meat, right? Accidentally, I picked out meat, and I use it to cut a piece of very hard cheese, and I have to really exert pressure to cut the cheese. So even though it's cold, everything involved is cold, nonetheless, the argument goes, that which has been absorbed in the knife is now extruded into the cheese. And therefore, you have to worry about the outer layer of the cheese that was exposed to this knife. So the argument would go.
And cheese as well?
And the opposite would be true as well. If I cut the knife, right? If I cut the meat with the knife that had been used to cut the cheese,
that's the opposite. You start with cheese.
Yeah, that's correct. The same would be true as well. Now, the Tosfos here has a discussion about whether this is really true. If something is very cold, because Tosfos points out when you use a knife to cut away the fat from a piece of meat, the tray fat, the chaylev, right? They do nikur. So he says that knife has now cut chaylev, and you're using it with pressure into the meat. So now you shouldn't be able to cut the meat with it. And in fact, Tosfos says that's why there's a practice of not using this knife to cut the meat once it's been used for nikur, for peeling away the fat. But Tosfos then says, however, our minhag is to be mekel. And Tosfos says, I need to find a limud zchus. The practice of limud zchus has gotten a bad name recently. Some people have been given a bad rap for justifying minhagim, but it's an ancient practice. Tosfos does it here. Tosfos says our minhag, in fact, is to be mekel. That we don't say that, and the reason he suggests maybe I could justify our minhag is because there has to be some heat present. Pressure alone in a purely cold environment won't do it. The reason why duchka de sakina is a factor here is because your shechting, everyone agrees, is at least warm. Even if it's not hot, it's the inside of an animal that was just alive. And therefore it has some degree of heat. Okay. So that was our second case. Our second case was the knife of someone who wasn't Jewish, and you used it for a shechita, and one view is you can just rinse and that's sufficient, and the other view is that the outer layer of meat that was exposed to the knife has to be removed. We now have our third case, the knife that was used for a treifa, for shechting a treifa, and now you want to use that knife. Sakin a treifa, a knife that was used to kill a treifa. Pligi bar v'acha v'ravina, servach and ravina have a machlokes chad omar bechamin v'chad omar bitzonin. One said that you have to do hagalah, you wash it with hot, you insert it in, now I shouldn't use the term wash it, you insert it in water that is at a high bubble, and that'll be enough to kasher it. V'chad omar bitzonin, and the other one said, no, all you have to do is wash it off with cold water and you're done. You don't have any further obligations. The hilchasa afilu bitzonin, and the law is indeed the bitzonin. Cold water is sufficient.
We said before that sucking but cutting is even bitzonin is going to absorb.
Is going to cause absorption. That's correct. So let's read the Gemara. Good question. Hang on. The iika belisa de parsa lemichfare. And if you have a rough cloth, like we mentioned before, to wipe it clean, lo tzarech, then you don't even need to wash it. That's good enough to get rid of any stuff that was on it. Just wipe it clean. Ulaman damar bechamin maitaima. What's the rationale for the one who says you need to do agala? Mishum de kabbala isura. Is it because you say, well, this knife absorbed iser from the treifa? That's your concern. De teranami bala iver menachai. I hate to tell you this, but every time you do shechita, that creature, until the shechita is complete, is iver menachai. It's part of a live animal that you're cutting. Anytime you cut into a creature, you're cutting Evrim and Achai. So therefore, just like you're saying now it absorbed Treifa, I'm going to tell you that in any Shechita, your knife absorbs Evrim and Achai, and therefore you shouldn't be able to use the knife anymore. Emas Bala, when did it absorb? L'chi Chaima, when it got heated up. Emas kachaima, when did it heat up? L'chigamra shchita, only at the end of the shchita. Ha'ishayta hetera haba, and at that point, it was actually heter. So that's why the case is different. There's no eiver v'nachai concern in such a case. The concern regarding the treifa is that the absorption is going to occur, even at the end, the absorption is going to occur from a treifa. That's what bothers us in this discussion. Whereas the opposing view is going to say there is no absorption. The only thing you need to do is remove superficial material from the treifa. He's gone. But the answer for Ducha de Sakina is that this isn't a debate about the knife's ability to introduce the treif. The question is, did it absorb the treif in the first place? So that's the third of my three cases. My first case was the knife of Avodah Zarah and the question of Hanah from it. The second one, and then also the issue of shamnunis, whatever fat is sitting on the knife. Our second issue was shchita with the knife of a non-Jew, and the third is the issue of shchita with a knife that had been used for a dreifa. The Gemara now has a tangent from our discussion about the concern for knives and their absorption and the fat that's on them, to discuss the kalim of a tabach, of a butcher. And this begins five statements from Rav Yehuda citing Rav. We're going to see two of them today. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. Rav Yehuda says, citing Rav, HaTabach tzarech shlosha, or should say shalosh, sakinin. He says a butcher needs to have three knives on hand. Achas sheshochet ba, one for shchita. V'achas, it should say, na'achas harechod. V'achas shemachatech ba'basar, one that he uses to cut meat. V'achas shemachatech ba'chalavim, and one that he uses to cut the treif fat, the non-kosher fat. Rashi notes the reason why you can't use the same knife for shchita and for cutting meat is because you want to keep it from getting a flaw, from getting a pagam. The worry is that if you use it for cutting meat also, it's going to get a pagam. So that's why you need three. So the Gemara says, why don't I say, though, you can use the same one for the meat and for the treif fat. Just use it for the meat first, then the treif fat, and each time you'll kosher it before you want to use it for the meat again. No, because we're worried you're going to confuse them. You'll confuse the order and use it for fat and then for meat. Nu hashanami machlufle. Why am I not aware that you're just going to get confused in terms of your different knives? Kaven da'asrachinu trei islay hakeira. Since you need two, there is a way to identify them. Rashi explains, we know that once you're told keep separate knives, you're going to mark them. It isn't just natural that you'll remember, but we know you'll put a sticker on it. Instead of meat and dairy stickers, they'll be selling the stickers that say fat and meat. That's the idea. So that's where you this first statement citing Rav. I want my butchers to have three separate knives. Second statement. V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Hatabach tzarech shnei kelim shalmayim. The butcher needs two troughs of water. Echad shemediach bo basar, v'echad shemediach bo chalavim. One that he uses to rinse meat, one that he uses to rinse fat, because the fat is not kosher. And the concern is that if you put the meat in the trough that had the water with the fat, there's pieces of fat floating in it. It's going to get onto your kosher meat. Viniskin lay. Sorry?
I just don't understand why you need a trough for the fat. Why did you just throw it out?
Probably because it's where you process to the. Well, no, actually, that wouldn't answer the question. I think maybe you had some kind of a hose setup where you poured water over the meat and used that to help you remove the fat, and that's running into this trough. That might be the answer. Right. No, it's true. But the either that or you know what? Based on what Rashi says, like the Yeshiv Shuf Yadayim, I wonder if maybe it isn't. I thought initially that meant that it was what you pulled off of the animal. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's that you're using this to wash your hands, and therefore now there's fat in it from that. But I don't think so. That's not his language. But the point is, somehow you're using this when you're processing it, when you're removing the fat, and it gets fat in the water. Why don't I just use one, and first I rinse the meat in it, and then I rinse the fat in it? That's your idea for how this is fat is getting in there. It's off of the rinsing. Gezeira shemiyadiyah chalavim be'achkach basar. No, you might get the order wrong. Hashanami michlefilei. Well, now you might get them switched. No, again, kevin datzrechinu tarti yislei akeira. Since we told him to have two, he will keep them separate. He'll make marks on them. And Amar Amemar, Mishmeder of Papa, Amemar said in the name of Rav Papa, lo lischof inish He says, when you have meat and you have fat, you have to be very careful that when you take the slabs of meat that have the fat on them, you don't put them on top of meat. Because what's going to happen is the fat is going to melt into the meat below. So Iachi says, if that's really true, ki taritzi nami, even if they're going to be upright, doiv tarbo balabisra, the fat is going to get absorbed in the meat, meaning you have a layer here, you have your layer here of meat, and there's fat on top of it, the fat is going to sink into the meat below. So he says, no, karma mafsik mitatoi, there's a membrane between the meat and the fat, and that's what keeps the absorption from happening. The same thing is true, there's a membrane over the fat as well. So therefore, when I turn it over on top of a piece of meat, there's still a membrane keeping the fat in. No, I didn't. The answer is that that's going to get ruptured when the butcher handles it. That upper membrane gets ruptured, whereas the lower membrane isn't touched by anybody. So the lower membrane is intact, keeping the fat from going into the meat below it. However, once you overturn a slab of meat on top of something else, then all bets are off. The upper membrane is going to rupture. Tosus notes it assumes there's heat present as well, because in the Karbanos by the Miluim, we're told by Yasem as Hachalavim al Hachazos. They put the chalev on top of the chazeh of the animal, the chazeh which is going to the kohen. So it must be that that's where they had allowed the heat to dissipate, and therefore the absorption would not, the melting of the fat into the meat would not take place.